Hi everyone, I'm Jonathan Corrie, co-founder and CEO of Precursive. Welcome along to the Precursive Perspective, our podcast where we sit down with some of the leading minds across customer success and professional services. In each episode, I speak with people involved in scaling companies of all sizes, from hypergrowth startups to mid-market SaaS, all the way through to enterprise technology and communications companies, as well as, of course, members of the investment and VC community now. And we explore how the best companies succeed in this continually evolving services delivery ecosystem, with special guests also including my two dogs, Cosmo and Ace, my kids, Frank and Artie. Frank now famous for pulling his tooth out live on one of the shows. Now, before we get into today's episode, in case you didn't know, spoiler alert, Precursive is the leading services delivery cloud for Salesforce. We combine award-winning task and resource management with easy-to-use professional services automation. Built on the Force.com platform, we're 100% Salesforce Lightning native, which means you can better align your sales and delivery teams, automate project admin so that your staff get time back to focus on driving outcomes and value for your customers. We believe very deeply that there is a direct correlation between faster time to value and retention. So bridging that gap between sales and success is priority one for Precursive. So let's get into today's episode. Welcome back, everyone, along to the Precursive podcast on a stormy Friday in the UK. I'm delighted to welcome my amigo that I met on the internet is it Salt Lake City?
Yeah, just outside Salt Lake.
Just outside. Yep. Right. Welcome, Jeff. Great to have you on. Do you want to give our listeners a little bit of an intro, who you are, where you come from, all of the above?
Very happy to do that. So my name is Jeff Rosenbaugh. I am the head of services at Lucid Software here based in Salt Lake. We've got offices around the globe, very global organization. We provide visual collaboration tooling and software. So if you've ever used Lucidchart, which is the best intelligent diagramming platform on the market, you've used the Lucid product. We've also got Lucid Spark, which is our collaborative whiteboard, which those two both come together as part of the Lucid suite, and Lucid Scale, which allows you to very rapidly diagram your cloud architectures with kind of the push of a button sort of a promise. I've been with Lucid here for 4 years now. I absolutely love it. It's been a great place to be. Our culture is fantastic. Our business is great. Our customers are great. JC, I know that you guys use Lucid at your company, and so we love our customers. And prior to that, though, I come from a deep background in enterprise. So I spent the majority of my career at a Fortune 5. At one point, we were Fortune 1. I was at ExxonMobil doing everything from, believe it or not, delivering monitors to people at refineries because they felt like that was a good role for people right out of college, to writing software, helping build out the first cloud deployments, things along those lines. And ultimately, at the end of my tenure there, I ran an agile transformation, which was kind of a new and unique thing. So everything from deeply technical work to heavy change management, enterprise rollouts, all that other stuff, which I think prepared me really well for the services space, and certainly understanding the types of customers that we work with here at Lucid. So,
I was going to say, I think when you told me about that background, like being on the practitioner side, being on the customer side, super valuable, right? Like you kind of have to take some of those learnings. I know from my business, we've tried to adopt software in the past, and some of it's gone well, some of it hasn't gone so well. So like being involved in that, I'm sure, set you up. Big fan of the product. We were laughing the other day when we were actually prepping for this. Well, my wife wasn't laughing. My wife fell down the stairs and dislocated her little pinky.
Oh no!
But we went to the hospital, went to the NHS. That's the one where you don't pay for the healthcare. And there was a
there was a US, I love it.
Well, yeah, straight across the bowels. No, and I was like, I was stood in there. She's seeing the nurse, and I'm looking at the wall, going, "That's a Lucid chart." I'm chatting to Jeff next week. That's quite funny. And then you looked it up in Salesforce, and I think it's true. Well, there we go. Right, let's get on. So, the thing that we're going to be focusing in and around today is, I think you guys have got a really interesting story. Well, you and your organization in services got a really interesting story to tell around kind of how you've evolved services, monetized it, and also structured it to drive a lot of value for both net new customers and existing clients. And I think
One of the things that's changed in the market over the last years is, I would say, the need for services leaders to be a lot more commercial, right? To have a stronger commercial mindset and partnership with the commercial organization. So a lot of your peers are trying to navigate how to effectively monetize their services. So can you tell us a little bit about that journey in your biz, please, to begin with?
Yeah. And it's been a bit of a ride. When I initially joined Lucid, services was very much in its infancy. There had actually been a couple false starts prior to me joining, which I didn't actually learn about until I got, maybe about 6 months into the job, because it had been kind of just gone for a while. But we had a small education team at the time. And then the beginnings of an implementation team. We had just carved off some people from our CS function to start focusing just on implementation. And they had fairly limited scope, and they're primarily viewed as cost centers. By example, training was often just kind of doled out for free. I used to joke it was like throwing candy off the parade floats kind of a thing. It's just like, you get a training, sure, why not? And the implementation team was expected, very clearly expected to deliver at no cost with very strict parameters set by leaders in other parts of the business. So it was clear that, number one, the existing structure both needed rigor and a stronger focus on value creation, just to make sure that we were, one, operating in a way that was sustainable, but then moving forward into kind of the next step. So, the first priority was to bring order to that unstructured hustle. We started with defining the clear implementation tiers, making it really explicit what customers got, what they didn't get, including, how we expected our sales reps to attach those offerings, and what we, again, what we would commit and not commit to do. And then making sure that we had a process around delivering other services at no cost. So, if a CSM or a sales rep's like, I need to get a training in front of this customer, and say, great, here's a simple process that we need you to follow so that we can at least track this for other revenue recognition reasons or, what have you. And some of those foundational decisions were hard because at Lucid, we've always prioritized being the best partner to our customers. And that is still very much in our identity. And it's something that my teams pride themselves in today. And that, while that's a really admirable desire and quality, that mindset has often translated into hesitancy around charging for services. So this monetization question is something I've been struggling with really since day one. I personally have not on occasion been very popular with our sales and CS teams as we've had to wade through some of those challenges. But we're getting better at it. After kind of establishing that structure, we began looking for opportunities to move beyond basic implementation. I think that was kind of really the beginning of framing what we want to go do. We worked with our product analytics and customer success teams. And through a part of that, two often related insights kind of emerged from the research that we did is that one, and this is very specific to the Lucid business, right? But one, templates, customers utilizing templates in our product drove virality, which is key to growth. And two, when customers adopted Lucid for their second, third, fourth, what have you use case, our retention and expansion KPIs skyrocketed. Right. So if we only got into a customer with a simple use case and that's all they ever thought to use Lucid for, not necessarily all they could use Lucid for, but all that they thought about when they thought about Lucid, that pigeonholed us and made it a little bit easier to either rip us out, replace us, or not move into new departments. So one of the first opportunities to test that came, we started working with a large financial institution here in the U.S. They had brought in Lucid Spark. So again, that's our collaborative whiteboard tool. They brought that into as part of a workplace and hybrid work initiative, looking to improve collaboration across their teams. We noticed an increasing level of interest in adopting whole product suite. So both of our products and really getting after it, but there were some barriers in aligning some of the internal workflows with the capabilities of the tool, just on their own. So
their internal capabilities or your internal capabilities?
So some of their internal capabilities, but then also identifying ways to properly visualize the things that they were trying to do on their own. Mm-hmm. Because we were, so the background is, or I guess the next step in that is we were working with somebody in the IT project management office, and they just weren't as technically savvy. as some of our other users that use our diagramming tools for, you know, actually diagramming, mapping out their architectures and all this other stuff. And so they were trying to help. The issue that they were dealing with, they were trying to make decision making on project prioritization and funding a lot more clear for senior executives, because they were getting into these long planning meetings, and it was very difficult for these program and project managers to effectively communicate like the impacts of certain decisions around priorities and what that would do to the resources they needed, et cetera. Mm-hmm. So their focus was to try and help their executives fully grok and kind of understand the impacts of what was going on. So yeah. For us, it was, you know, we had the expertise in the product. We just came in, we helped build a custom maintainable template that was able to align with their workflow, all the other process pieces on their side, helping reduce the complexity and giving them a clearer way to evaluate and fund their projects. And it was immediate and transformative. And it's been a story that we were able to tell across our sales floor. You know, the team there found the process so much simpler and so much more effective that when they went into their executive meetings to actually have these kind of prioritization conversations, out of that, the executive said, "This is fantastic. This helps me a ton. All of you are now using this." And immediately we were expanding into the remainder of that segment of business, right? And so unlocking a few of those early wins, that's one of my favorites. You know, that kind of validation gave us the runway to start then saying, okay, paid offerings are a thing. They're going to help address customer pain points. They're going to unlock all kinds of additional value inside of these accounts. So let's start thinking about services as a strategic lever for how we grow, not just a necessary evil in terms of making sure that we get a little bit of education out there or that we get people set up and configured on the platform.
All right, cool. Let's pause there because there's a lot in there. So I think taking some things out of that are really, I think, useful. And the way that different people come on the show and use language is, I think, useful to others. So one is, I think, when you're thinking about the design and iteration of your implementation methodology and packages, what you don't get is as important as what you do get.
Yeah.
Right? Because that's the bit that what you don't get is the bit that always causes the friction around scope creep, around do we charge more for this? Is it a change request? Is it an add-on? Why is this taking so long? Et al. I think the getting into the mindset, right, of this is, I think, coming at it from the perspective of driving for that early win, I think is a great way to think about getting into the mindset. Getting away from, I've got to sell stuff, I've got to commercialize, and getting much more into, we need to drive some early wins that people have paid for. And to be honest, even if they paid maybe less than they should, if it's paid for, they paid for this, it doesn't matter if it was your attach rate was like, you know, down here and it should have been up here. If you're beginning to monetize, I think that like focusing on the win is really important. I then think something that we're going to come on to is kind of how you've thought about that, like this, like you said, the second and the third use case, and thinking ahead to that, not trying to cram that all into maybe implementation number one. So I think all really useful things there. For given your background, I mean, PS leaders might not find, I'm going to go forward maybe one or two questions here, but so sales is not always someone's natural home, right? Okay.
Yeah.
But you've kind of, how have you embraced some of that commercial elements of the role?
Yeah. And I'll admit, JC, like, this was a steep learning curve for me coming from an enterprise organization. You know, spent over a decade working with internal systems, internal stakeholders, you know, prioritization, battling for funding and things like that was very real, but it was just a very different scenario to the fast paced world of SaaS, as I kept being reminded.
Plus you all work together. You're not pitching someone else. It doesn't work with you, right?
Yeah, you know, that person over in the, you know, in the chemicals company, like, you know, I got to make sure that I understand that's a long-term potential relationship, not, you know, something that may feel a little bit more transactional at times. So big cultural shift for me, big change. What really helped me bridge the gap, and thankfully I was able to do this fairly early because I'd been on the other side of it, right? You know, one of the roles I was in our enterprise architecture team, in my previous role, and I was dealing with vendors like Lucid regularly. And so when I stepped in and I started thinking about it a little bit more, I was like, you know, if I reframe what selling means, this is going to make me a lot more comfortable. You know, because at its core, selling services isn't about persuasion or pressure. It's about problem solving. And if you're blessed like I am, you know, I happen to have a CFO who's wildly supportive and not as worried about margin and some of the other things as much as he is about the growth that we drive in our subscription revenue. You know, that's even more true. And so, you know, many of the customers I engage with right now are actually in the types of roles that I held in the past, which is really helpful. So I know their challenges, I know their priorities, I know a lot of their concerns because I've lived them. And I also know that what it takes for them to sometimes get ahead. And you know, I can ask myself, like, hey, like, I like this. Can I like this person? Can I want to support them in getting ahead? And like, does that also help me have a different conversation in terms of how we can partner? So together, you know, that gives us an opportunity to explore how our services can help them solve problems and achieve their goals, whether they be, you know, short-term or career-oriented goals as an individual. So once I kind of adopted that mindset, so many other things fell into place. Pricing and packaging stopped feeling like a hurdle, became more of a tool to connect customer needs with solutions. It's also not about convincing the customer to spend more. It's about showing them the ROI and the outcomes that they can expect from the investment. And some of that sometimes looks like, you know, we'll sell them a smaller package, or we'll sell them like a starter service kind of a deal. And then we'll come in, and then through part of our engagement closeout, you know, we highlight like, hey, we started with you at the beginning, and we said, here are the value metrics that you're trying to drive. We're in the productivity space, so a lot of time it's time saved, but like there's others that you know, occasionally come up, and we say, hey, here's kind of where we landed, or like, let's actually have the conversation here in our closeout. Did we help you save this time? Like, what does that look like for you now? And it's been really fun to help them unpack that. And then we can turn that around and show that ROI. And oftentimes we'll have customers just be like, oh, wow, I saved more money than I spent with you. Yeah. I should be doing this all day long. And we're like, great, because we have recommendations for other things that you should do based off of, you know, our experience. And so, you know, that's really helped. And again, it feels a lot more like a partnership. So for PS leaders that are stepping into the kind of the commercial role, the key for me is to lean in what you already do best, which is understanding customers, identifying their needs, solving their problems, and like having a good conversation about that. Maybe a bit of storytelling, particularly if you're a good storyteller, like leverage that to the ends of the earth. Because once you view sales kind of through that lens, it feels less foreign, and it can feel a little bit less transactional and more like a natural extension of what you've always been good at and probably valued about your skill set.
Yeah. Couldn't agree more on the problem solving bit. Like when I was asked, I used to be in, well, when you're CEO, you're always in sales, but when I was in sales, I remember that's how I described my job to people who had no idea what I did for a living. I like solve problems, help people solve problems.
Yeah.
Right. Cause when you, a lot of the very best salespeople have that genuine passion about that and take a lot of satisfaction, not just from closing deals, but from helping people achieve goals. And really good salespeople develop a lot of friendships with a lot of their clients. Like, you know, when we were a startup Precursive still is a startup, but when we were really a startup and it was just me and a couple of other folks in a dark basement picking up the phone, like some of those people, you know, that we helped in the early days, it changed their careers, right? And they went on to bigger and better things. And it's like, you know, they're work friends, as it were, which is super cool. I think something for people to consider is if you can get into the habit of documenting value as early as possible and as consistently as possible, it makes that storytelling and the, if you don't want to call it sales, if you want to call it commercial acumen, right? It makes it a little bit easier, because I think that's where you can take that transition from we're just delivering something to this is actually the value that we created. And as you say, you can then draw that back to, well, look, if we saved someone X amount, like, you know, 7,000 hours, well, actually, that's equivalent to 4 full-time equivalents, which at 150K a pop is 600 grand. So, like, I can go and tell that story. That's a story that I can sell, you know. So it's I think you've touched on a few interesting things there. Now, you mentioned some of the work that you did in around implementations. I think something that I want to touch on now is a little bit about kind of then how you've gone that step further in iterating what you provide in services. So tell us a bit more about what the overall catalog now looks like for you guys in terms of services.
Yeah, and this is maybe a good time to talk about this because we're upending a bit of it. but where we've been has been our catalog is aligned around key customer needs and falls into three categories. These are going to sound very familiar to most people. Product training, implementation, technical configuration migration, which is essentially implementation, but we kind of rope those together, and then consulting. We do have a couple of other additional bespoke packages that are tied to specific use cases, such as customers that have embraced agile methodologies. But we are kind of in the mix of considering whether we want to continue those or kind of move away from it. Product training is pretty straightforward, but I do want to call out, like, part of our product training investment is also very heavily into scalable motion around on-demand resources and things through our academy. We provide training and we try to bundle it with different things. Right now it's a part of our no-cost implementations, but we also try to bundle it in a handful of other services because we do think it's really valuable. But at the same time, it's just so unscalable in many ways. And customers, as most customers, have moved away from live in-person training to live on-demand, like live webinar training. We just see the impact is very different. And so we still love it. We still get a ton of value from it, but like because it's hard and it's not as scalable and product knowledge is so important, there's huge investment into on-demand resources on our side. So that's kind of where we are from a training standpoint. I mentioned technical configuration migration. They're generally focused on first 90 days. And we may talk about this because JC, because I know you're very interested in it, but like our implementation is not wildly complex. And we do it currently at no cost. I think we're going to change that. But what we do charge for out of this kind of block of services is for customer or competitor migrations to make sure that we're getting customers off of competitive products that they're wanting to remove from their environment. So we do charge for that, and that's a big part of what we do. And then the third bucket's consulting, and that's getting into specific pain points, unlocking new use cases, driving specific value metrics, things along those lines. That's really been a catalog. Or sorry, been a category for to drive growth in more ways. And that's probably the part of my catalog right now that's a little over full, because we've tried to do what we've done historically, and this is part of what I want to adjust, is we've built individual offerings based off of specific needs or specific use cases or even persona types in certain cases. And that part of the catalog's gotten a bit tougher for our sales floor to navigate. And so I think we're going to actually simplify a good chunk of that, get to a smaller number of SKUs, but then just like make sure that we have robust service delivery scripts and things like that on the back end. So the team still maintains all the flexibility and things that they can do, but we can simplify how we talk to customers and how we work with our sales reps.
Yeah, you can always, one of the things to do there, Jeff, is you can always have like a land and expand type of approach with the SKU itself. So actually you reduce the number of SKUs, you make it simpler, but the whole point is to get you in there to expanding out to other kind of consulting services, right? I think that can work. I think the other thing around migrations, that's where PS can again have an impact for sales, is when you're doing those migrations, a lot of the technical documentation that you use, so for example in our world, it's like the field mapping, right, from an existing PSA tool over to Precursive, you've got that field mapping. So what's the object there? What's the object here? We take that and we put that into decks that we have, so that when we're talking to a prospect where they're using that particular PSA product, we're like, okay, you're moving off of X. Here's kind of what that looks like from an architecture standpoint, from a migration standpoint. It's a couple of slides, but it's super powerful because people are like, oh, okay, yep, you've done this before then, right? Because you can answer the question, you can have a salesperson say, yes, we've done X amount from X to Y or A to B. But then when you have a little bit of that technical, bit on the side, it's quite powerful.
Well, the other piece of that, JC, if I can jump in,
Different.
like what we have also done with our competitive migrations is like there's absolutely a technical aspect of this, and there's a helping get customers feel comfortable and confident that they're not going to experience data loss and moving over to Lucid. But we emphasize change management a ton. And I think that's one of the things that, like, as I meet with some of my peers and we just kibitz on the state of services, like when they talk about this, they very heavily focus on like, here's the technical pathway to get from point A to point B. And a lot of their folks are just so focused on that, that like they lose the narrative. And this is maybe where my background helps, coming from enterprise, of like that change management experience is really important. So like, particularly for us, like one of the products that we replace in a lot of organizations is Visio. Visio has been around and some people have been using it for like 25 plus years. And Lucid is undoubtedly a better product. But there's that just that change process of like, hey, I'm a enterprise architect. I've been using this for forever. Like, is that going to work for me? Yes, it will. We can talk you through that, but also like, let's bring you on the journey to get to the other side. Because like going back to the commercialization of services, you know, early on, it was so difficult to move sales in the direction that we wanted to move them. And so getting attach rates and things like that up, I only have so much control on how much I can drive that, right? There's institutional things that we can do to like improve that, but I only have so much control. But what I can control from day one, or at least my teams can control, and this is a huge credit to them, is delivering kick-ass services, like delivering a kick-ass experience that is comprehensive, that is delightful, that leans on all the things that are really important. And so, you know, we had, maybe I guess we had a little bit of the benefit because we weren't attaching at a super high rate early on to where we could build those muscles and we can do that. But, you know, I look at our NPS and CSAT and they're through the roof, and that buys us that opportunity to then go convince the board that like, hey, we do need a quota, or hey, we do need these other things to drive sales even further. But it also ensures that customers on the other side, like they don't just see us as a transactional partner coming in to like move document A from platform this to platform this. Yep. It's no. We're here to help you through the entire experience and to take that load and to take that stress off of you in a more meaningful way.
Yeah. I think you also have to be quite challenger about how you help people to understand how they need to manage expectations when it comes to change, because Rome wasn't built in a day. Right. And I think
you're always going to have 10% of your audience that just doesn't, they're just not going to be happy.
Yeah.
Like, it's just the reality of life.
Yeah. They're the people that don't turn up to the training or don't go to the meeting or don't switch the camera on. They're just the problem children that will never do as you expected. But I think to your point, if you telegraph that around the change management piece, pre-sales and services can play a role there, because I think a lot of people are like when it comes to selling services, they tend to like the conventional wisdom is let's make this sound as easy as possible. Mm-hmm. And the reality is if you're selling bigger deals into mid-market or bigger companies, they're not thinking that. They're already thinking that this is going to be hard. They know that. You know what? That's why there's 15 people on the call, right? Is because of that. And, you know, John Paul, George and Ringo have already like highlighted that this is going to be a shit show. So it is hard.
Sorry to interrupt this amazing episode of the Precursive Perspective, but if you're a professional services leader, this is for you. The Services Delivery Alliance is a growing community to help manage and optimize services delivery, consisting of over 500 professional services leaders. The SDA brings together its members for virtual and in-person roundtable-style workshops where VPs, heads, and directors of services or professional services can find solutions to persistent challenges in their world of delivery. Brainstorming with their peers on a variety of topics for productizing services, partner delivery, and monetization of services, including strategy, cost management, operating models, services portfolio management, sustainable growth initiatives, and operational excellence. Join for free now at servicesdeliveryalliance.com. And now back to the episode.
I think you said something earlier, actually, which is, I think, something that people should do more of, which is like, you need to do a good job of visualizing that change, visualizing the things that you want to do, because sometimes actually the client's not that good at that. I think, particularly in your type of solution, but I think one of the skill sets that's probably under invested in services is that communications and presentations piece, and being able to basically help clients build some of the assets in and around the project and make them that little bit sharper, you know, so they don't roll up with a deck in Arial font with 700 words in it. Do you know what I mean? Like,
no, I totally know what you mean. There's an aspect of like, you know, we're a visual collaboration solution in the market. Visual is so crucial. Like, I have to have people on my team that understand visual storytelling, but then, also we certainly communicate and hold them to an expectation of, verbal storytelling as they go to tell the broader story. But yeah, all of those components are really important, because to your point again, and we were kind of joking about this a little bit before we started recording the podcast, but your most sustainable and valuable customers over time are sometimes going to be some of the boring industries, right? The people who've been around for a very long time, they're very stable and they've got big organizations. They're also some of the hardest to crack into. And because there's inertia in a lot of ways, right? And so you've got to be able, you're not going to be able to sneak past them and be like, oh, this is the easiest thing in the world. Don't even worry about it. Like, here's a couple quick things to tell you that, like, they'll sniff right through that because they've done it. And maybe they got fooled once, but they're not going to get fooled twice. Like, and you're probably the 10th person that they've talked to about rolling out some new software in their business. And so, you have to be real with them, but there are ways to tell compelling stories to make sure that you're highlighting, here's the customer success in the past. Here's all the experience that we bring to bear. Here's the visual of kind of the timeline that we put together. Here's a high level. And then here's something that's like really bespoke and nuanced that we built for a particular customer. And we're going to do that for you too. I think all of that is really an important part of the pre-sale messaging, but all equally as important post-sale, and making sure that the experience continues to be like a rhythm and really, something that people can just fall into.
I think those, like you said, those less than fashionable, harder to change, more old school, risk-averse clients are the ones where you really find out if your methodology works or not, or where the gaps are. Right.
That's a good one.
We've had that with a couple of clients that are kind of more maybe kind of old school in that regard, traditional like on-premise software providers kind of moving into SaaS, and we use some cool recording software like many organizations, and I was looking at one of these calls and I was like, this is pulling teeth. And I messaged the CSM and I was like, How do you think, like, when they're making progress? And he's like, yeah, I got an email from two of the other people saying they're ecstatic because like that miserable crew who's really hard to please, like that's the most pleased they've ever been. And I remember another client back in the day, which is a satellite company, and this is going back to the point around you make some friends if you're good in sales. One of them, it was like the PMO for a satellite company that put in our tool, and we did the kind of the kickoff or the training, and like everyone was like poker face and like coming out, and I got a message later on. I was like, oh, that was this is the best tool they've seen. And I was like, oh great, what was the feedback? And they said, it's not shit. I was like, really? I'm like, yep. I'm like, okay, that is and that's good. And they're like, yep. They've never said that. Right. So just one final point then on kind of this iteration, because you can over-index on the implementation side of things, right? So you guys have had a lot of success in providing services to existing customers. Why were you gravitating there? Or what was it, just a natural kind of thing that happened there in terms of that's where you went?
Yeah, in some ways it just came out of necessity, if I'm being totally honest. As a company, as a business, Lucid has embraced a product-led growth motion more or less from the very beginning.
Yep.
So the majority of our growth is coming from existing customers, period, end of sentence, regardless of, anything else. And so we've got an incredibly robust self-serve business as well. So there's always been a focus on like, how do we take these accounts that are opting into Lucid, cause either, early days we were getting tons of cold calls of like, hey, I just want to buy your product. Like, how do I do this? Like it was all so much inbound coming to our sales reps. And then, through our product-led growth, self-service motion. And so for enterprise customers, who already have Lucid in-house, they've already gone through some of that configuration step and everything else, because it's not wildly challenging to get initially configured on Lucid. And so, our value during the implementation phase is less of like it's less about time to value kind of metrics, right? Like, because they can get value pretty quickly. It's more around how do we ensure that we get them set up around centered on enterprise grade needs, right? So things like setting up single sign-on, managing integrations, supporting rollout plans or change management efforts. That's where that focuses. And so like our implementation has always been super important to make sure that we do a lot of that stuff, because there's all kinds of internal KPIs for how we know that we grow inside of organizations that we can kind of influence as a part of that journey in a positive way. But at the end of the day, like what we can uniquely offer from a professional services standpoint is partnership and services that go deeper into value generation for our customers. So like digging into their use cases and helping them exploit those. So it's been, you know, it's moving from getting started to embedding the projects and creating stickiness, which was probably the word du jour for the first year that I was here. It's like, Jeff, you just need to help generate more stickiness, more stickiness, more stickiness. So when you view it that way, you know, every existing customer is actually a fantastic opportunity to grow with. So whether that's expanding the use cases that they're already using with Lucid, or getting into more so that Lucid becomes a daily necessity for users, helping them onboard as many you know, more users as teams grow, or partnering with them on strategic projects that drive some innovation inside of their business. So, you know, focusing on existing customers allows us to create long-term relationships and demonstrate our value in ways that go well beyond the initial purchase. In my mind, that's a win-win, because customers are getting a great ROI from their tool, which again cements your brand, cements your value proposition as a business. And then, you know, we get to deepen the partnership, which opens up opportunities for us to sell additional products in the future or additional services and all that other stuff, right? Like if we've got a really strong customer that's on Lucid Chart, when we initially brought out Lucid Spark, it was a really easy cross-sell to bring Lucid Spark. Now they're under a single license, but that was really easy. And, you know, as a business, we'll continue to introduce new things. Our best customers in buying those new platforms, products, add-ons, whatever we end up doing, like they're likely going to be existing customers that we've got great partnerships with.
It's just like that value moment. It's so important not to, like, everyone talks about, like, you know, how we get them to outcomes and things like that. But it's so important to be able to have people in the team, either in services or the partnership with CS or whomever it is, who's really able to capture that kind of like value moment. Where I went to visit a client, they were in Norway, and was talking to the new person who'd come in to take over. And, you know, I was walking out and I was like, you want the one dashboard to rule them all with this, 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 and this in it, right? And they were like, yep. Yeah. I'm like, we'll get you that by X date, right? And then we did. And it was like, are you now getting value? And it's like, yes, now I want to do this, this, and this, right?
Yeah,
or can we do this, this, and this? And it's, and I think that's the thing when it comes to like, you made that point about value, is when you're at that door, you can have a customer that's maybe in a situation where they're not getting as much as they want, and then you get them to the promised land, they're much more, just much more open then to like, okay, what's the other thing that you've got? Now, if like implementation was a bit rocky, you know, they'll have more maybe due diligence about how it's not going to be rocky this time, or you're going to need to show them that you've learned your lessons, and we're not going to do that, we're going to do this. But I just think that point that you raised there about your ability to create that value and that stickiness is super key. Because I think for where this show is quite interesting is like in an organization where it is easy to use, and we've spun up your solution to map out, for example, how our clients manage their services process in Precursive. So tell me the approach about how you get to figuring out, because it's a very everything use case type of product. How do you get to that point where you're like figuring out like what the value is and what the outcomes are to link to those value added services?
Yeah. Do you mean, just to clarify, do you mean kind of at a high level when we think about like packaging, or do you mean like in an individual engagement? Because I mean, I could go either direction there.
So like, let me put it another way. So
sure.
You would have been in your world forced to think about like, how do you provide more value added services versus simply just like an implementation, right?
Yeah.
So how did you go about that?
Yeah. So a lot of it was, you know, I mentioned some of this earlier, but, you know, coming in and understanding very early, you know, we don't have, at the time I thought of it as a luxury, we don't have the luxury of having a very complicated product to implement. Because initially I wanted to get my feet off the ground. I came from enterprise. This was a new world. I wanted to be successful right out of the gate. And I was like, oh, that would be so easy. But quickly identifying and turning and realizing like, hey, that's not the thing, but getting organizations to better understand what our product is capable of doing and getting into those additional use cases is going to be so much. And so for us, in terms of like really identifying and poking through that, was doing a lot of initial discovery. I think in early days, it was all about just gathering feedback. I mentioned talking, working with our product, sales, analytics teams, things like that, to go better understand like what was working. Like when a product or when a customer grows inside of our product, or when they buy more licenses, like what kind of behaviors do we typically see? Or when K factor or virality picks up, like what are the types of things that we see? And seeing if there were avenues there. So that was kind of the first thing, is like go do exploration within the business to better understand what customers need, where those pain points may be, or what those opportunity spaces might look like. And staying really open to feedback. We listen to our customers very aggressively. We've been sending NPS and CSAT surveys out since the day I got here. We get thousands of responses a year because we send them out after every type of engagement, including every single one of our trainings. And we get great feedback, but also really pointed feedback in certain areas that'll help us better understand, like, okay, like this isn't really hitting on the area that the customer was expecting us to hit on. So how do we tailor that a little bit more? Or does that force us to think about what we do a little differently and say, this service, people are assuming that this particular service is going to meet all their needs. Maybe we need something different, or maybe we need a different story to tell. I also spent a lot of time in, executive business reviews wherever I can. And, that little bit of effort to do that and then kind of tie those threads together from what I hear from different customers and where they're viewing our product fitting into their tech stack and into their initiatives. Really helpful, because I can lead them on a journey to see all the different things that Lucid can do for them, because we probably can. You're right. Like our marketing, it's a double-edged sword. It's like, thousands of use cases, which is great in some regards, but in other ways, it's like, okay, but which ones are for me? So like, we have
And
that.
why do I need services if it's so easy to use?
And so we have that story, but like the other side of the story is, well, what do customers naturally bucket you in? Right. And maybe you can change that over time, but it's really instructive to just understand, like, here's how they think about your product. And so by gathering that, pulling those ties together, we can start small and test some new ideas with customers before rolling them out broadly, and just be like, hey, we're seeing a little bit of we're seeing some interest in this particular area. Let's go try some things. So an example of this is, and we've been doing this for, this is in pilot, but we've been doing it for like about a year and a half now. So it's not, calling it a pilot's a little bit funny. But we've been piloting an expert on retainer offering. Because again, Lucid is very intuitive and easy to use. And so there's a little bit of like, well, do we really need people here all the time? And what we found is that a lot of our accounts, they just like, it's not necessarily that they can't learn the things in product, it's that they don't necessarily have the time to go do some of those things. And
Bingo.
that by us doing it, our expertise, our speed of delivery amplifies their ability to use the product in really new, meaningful ways that then drives some virality. So like, it's kind of similar to a technical account manager is what we've been doing. It gives customers certain number of hours a month with a Lucid expert that they've got kind of set up to ready to go. We want to structure it eventually as a sustainable recurring service. So we've spent a lot of time answering key questions around like, are customers going to find enough value in this to want to renew? Because if you set it up as a recurring service, you kind of want to make sure you've got a high renewal rate. How does the scope of what we're doing here with an expert differ from premium support SLAs? Right, because premium support is also something that we want to offer, and so those kind of considerations really encourage us to be thoughtful and deliberate about it. So it's getting in, doing some experimentation, not being afraid to be told you're wrong, not being too precious about the idea that you're bringing in, and getting some of that early insight so that you can start thinking about, okay, here's what I want to go do. Now, how do I potentially scale that? Because if you're not thinking about that on the back end as well, then you're setting yourself up for, oh gosh, I got to redo my pricing and packaging all over, every year or so, to make sure that I'm realigning to the needs of the business.
So one of the things that I was taught, or and that well, I've taught, I basically picked up from, I talk to a lot of people in services, so I'm picking up all the little different things that people are doing, and then I bring that back into my business. So it's quite useful, to say the least. So one of the things that we do in and around subscriptions is we don't think about them like one dimensionally over like a 1 year time horizon, right? And so we're looking at it from a 3 year perspective, and we're saying to the client, look, in year one, that subscription service can be used in a couple of ways. One, if there's additional things that we need to do that get missed in a scope, right? We all know it happens, get missed in a scope, then we can draw down on that service rather than going back for like a change request or additional budget, right? During the implementation. And then number two, inevitably, like I just came off a call earlier with a client with our services team and them, and I basically sit there and give some advice on the stuff that's outside of things that we're doing in the tool and some of the strategies around that. But we're kind of iterating on, they've got their dashboard up. This is all useful. Okay, but now what? It's like, well, now I want to cut the data this way, and now I need to include this. And actually, we don't need it all in one. We need to break it out into these three areas. Great, that's fine. And then we've got the follow-up coming, you know. And so that's like that iterative kind of adoption's the wrong, it's like optimization, right? Of like when you get into it, then in our type of solution, which is touching a huge amount of different processes within the customer's business, and there's a lot of fiscal elements to it that needs to be right. And then in year two, it would be about kind of as their use of your solution evolves and they want to do new stuff, then that same team, the sort of the things that they're working on them with evolve from being kind of more technical and optimization to much more like, now it's something that's a bit more value add, maybe it's a new product, maybe it's an add-on. And then eventually, I think it's where we're going to get to, because we've been doing this now, we're probably in, I would say, year two of it. Year three is much more going to be, I think, then advanced advisory, and then probably by then AI and agents, and using those as like an engine room behind it. So that it's much more like, right, now you've got this data, we'll start doing some analysis on here's where things are going well or not going well and why. And if we plug in this automation or this bit of AI, yeah, again, you can improve by X, Y, or Z. And I think it's that kind of like evolution of the service offering, or the, not the service offering, that's the wrong word. The evolution of like how you work with the client over a period of time.
Yeah.
Which is the interesting bit.
And it's the evolution of what they need. And, you know, I am not too proud to say, JC, I learned this from you, thinking about services and kind of this multi-year or multi, you know, for us, we were actually debating, we were having a conversation about this. Is it multi-year for us, or is it like every 6 months? Like, how do we need to whatever those time horizons are, but it is really important. It's actually, you know, it's one of the things, one of many things that's kind of shaping the new pricing packaging strategy that we're deep in strategy on right now is, you know, cause in this will resonate with a lot of other PS leaders. Like, you know, there's certain things that our sellers do great at, and there's certain things that we really struggle with helping them like understand kind of the path forward in terms of selling certain types of services. And so I just want to simplify all that. And I want to treat our sales reps as like they're selling into, and again, we're a product-led growth company, so year one is like a very mythical thing, right? But like, I want our sales reps to focus in on like, you know, what we would consider year one type service. And actually, if we think about it that way, we can make it really simple. And then we can put more of the onus on our CS teams or even on my services teams to do that upsell into, you know, whatever that next time horizon is, whether it's year two or, you know, second half of the year two or, you know, whatever it may be. Yep. But maybe we can do more there in terms of, we do a great job of discovery, we do a great job of identifying need. Like, we should, instead of asking our sales reps to learn a whole new language of services, which, you know, candidly still here at Lucid, we've got a lot of younger reps who come in and they just don't have that experience. Rather than forcing them to do that, why don't we do more of it, but do it on the backs of some initial foot in the door that we can make really simple, right? And again, it goes back to the same motion, because like the year one stuff can be simple because most customers need a lot of the same things. It's in the later years where like some of their needs diverge and change. And we can be the ones that are really smart enough to identify that and highlight it and make opportunities out of it.
Great. Well, listen, super interesting. I think on that point as well, one thing there is, like you say, one of the things you talked about earlier is just like, is just the importance of that simplicity. And I think, like you said, if you're The problem, I think, for services is because they're so kind of there are so many different things that you can do. The challenge is you could be in the room with your commercial colleagues and you're like, oh, well, we can do this and we could do this and we could do this and this is our whole thing. And it's like, no. Here's how, for example, you get help. We help you get deals over the line. Bring us in here, position it this way. Here's the assets. Here's the message. Here's the objections you might hear. Like, let's make it easy for you, right? So that you can sell this either with us, without us, or all of that type of thing. And that's all I need you to worry about. And as you say, you take more ownership of, we've got to sell this other stuff, right, to existing clients. Well, that then becomes about how do you orchestrate the relationship post-sale and in your growth sale organization about who's at the sharp end of the spear communicating with the client.
Because, and that's 100% within our control as service leaders, right? Like that's a great place to be, because we can influence that by hiring the right people, enabling them the right ways and everything else. And that's where I like to live, is if I can't control the situation, I just need to make it as, I need to pave the path as best I can and make it as straightforward and easy as I can. And one of the great learnings is that when I think it's easy, it's probably not easy enough, because, like, you know, I live in this world, right? And so that's, you know, my shout out to my peers. Like, if you think it's easy, it probably still needs to be a little bit easier, which is fine. Like, we can all move in that direction, but if you make that as easy as possible, give yourself, like, where you can really control the different variables in terms of experience, the right kind of engagement, the right type of communication and change management and all those other pieces, that's a great place to be.
Cool, man. Well, on that, we will end right on time. Thank you ever so much for joining. I love it when people prepare. It's brilliant. Have a great weekend. Thank you for coming on. Enjoyed it?
Yeah, it was good. It was good.
All right. I love your lid game as well. So for those,
I wore this hat very expressly for you, JC. I'm not gonna lie.
Well, I have my, like, in the background, I've got my Steve Sisu thing vibes going on here. So I'm gonna go and walk the dogs. And with that, have a great weekend, everybody.
Right back at you. Take care.